Okay, so here we are. Beyond A over S equals 1 over 4 pi. I'm actually going to be talking about a number of papers that I've written in the past year with a whole bunch of different people. One of them sitting here in the audience, and so they should get due credit in everything I say.
Probably two of them.
Two of them?
Show
shows around? Oh!
You should look at that, right?
Yeah. In France, actually.
Excellent.
So what's the theme? The theme is that I'm going to be talking about the effects of higher curvature gravity interactions in ADS-CFT calculations of various thermal transport coefficients, the shear viscosity being one of them. So a brief overview here. I'll make some introductory remarks, many of which, many of you may have seen some of those last week. Then I'll be talking about various corrections that appear. There's an R to the fourth appearing in supergravity. Our type 2B string theory, we've been doing some work on R squared corrections. And then I'll talk, if there's time, a bit about how one might be able to use these calculations to make precise comparisons with stuff that they're seeing at RIC. And then there's a concluding transparency. So the motivation, well, at RIC and soon at LHC, people are studying experimentally the strongly coupled quark gluon plasma, this remarkable new phase of matter. And so what we're interested, or what they would like to hear about or get some theoretical insight into, is the real-time dynamics of the system, but it's that strong coupling. And so if, as theorists, we go to our standard theorist toolkit and we dig around, we find that the cupboard is bare. There aren't appropriate tools that we learned about in our field theory courses, grad courses, that can be applied here. However, of course, the string theorists working independently have been developing gauge gravity duality, which is a remarkable tool to study these questions exactly for certain strongly coupled gauge theories. So our favorite is, of course, type 2B strings on ADS5 cross S5, and on this side, N equals 4, 2 per Yang mils. Of course, for technical reasons, I'm only ever going to talk about supergravity, which means we're going to be limited to large number of colors and large TUF coupling. Now, what I said up here was QCD, but what we have down here is super Yang mils. So why do we think this is an appropriate starting point? Why? After all, QCD, it's a confining theory. There's a discrete spectrum. There's three colors. On this side, I said we needed a large number of colors. It's a conformal theory. It's a supersymmetric theory. They look very different. On the other hand, what I'm comparing here is really the vacuum or perturbations of the vacuum. What we were really interested in was cranking up the temperature here so that we went beyond the deconfinement transition. And so at that point, what we have here is a plasma of gluons and quarks, or fundamental matter. And if we're just beyond the deconfinement transition, this is still a relatively strongly coupled system. And so the physics here is described by words like streaming and correlation length. On this side, as soon as we heat it up, we also get a strongly coupled plasma of gluons and now adjunct matter, although we can add fundamental matter as well. And again, the physics here is described by words like screening and finite correlation lengths. And so the words start to sound the same, and so there are some similarities between those two systems. A warning, of course, is that if we continue to crank up the temperature, eventually the coupling here runs to weak coupling, and we'll end up with a free gas of gluons and quarks. Whereas this was a conformal theory, so if it's strongly coupled here, it's strongly coupled here, it's strongly coupled here. And so at very high temperatures, any potential similarities here are going to go away again. But there may be this intermediate regime then where you can hope that perhaps there's some kind of universal behavior and that the insights we get on this side can be imported to that side. So that's a very nice story. It's a nice set of words. But is there anything that we can look around and put some meat to this? So one place to look is the lattice. So here's a relatively old paper from 2001. And what they're doing is they're looking at the deconfinement transition for various QCD-like theories. And so what they're showing here is the energy density divided by T to the fourth. And so here's the deconfinement transition. They've lined them all up so they all occur at one. But because of the different matter content, the energy is slightly different in each one of those cases. But, well, what motivated them to do that is they were thinking that what they would find after you deconfined is a free gas of particles. And so for a free gas of particles, the energy density goes like T to the fourth, and that's why they presented it this way. But, yeah?
What does 2 plus 1 flavors mean?
It's the masses. This is 2 light or massless and 1 massive. So for a free gas, there's the energy density actually goes like T to the fourth, but there are various factors here where you count the number of degrees of freedom or the number of fields. And so if we divide not just by T to the fourth, by this epsilon naught for each one of these theories, the graph looks like this. And so there are a number of things we can take away from that. First of all of these graphs, they have this beautiful plateau, but it's sitting significantly below one. And so that indicates that this is still a strongly coupled system. Another thing is that the graphs have all sort of bunched up, and so it might be hinting that there is some kind of universal or near universal behavior here. The other thing is that even though it's strongly coupled, this is a plateau, and so the temperature is really the only scale in the game. The quark masses or the confinement scale aren't playing a role or much of a role here, and so it is an indication then that perhaps in this phase we're getting conformal behavior.
So the thing is, you had this was the number of particles which are masses in the formula of the density.
I just counted the number of degrees of freedom, but I counted them as being at zero mass.
Oh, so we shouldn't expect the ratio of 2 to 3 between the 0 and
3? No. I ignored all of the masses here, and I just counted the number of particles. So if I go to very, very high temperatures out here, you'd expect those graphs to go up to one now. We wanted to look at ADS-CFT. Before we do that, the other interesting thing is that the experiments that we're talking about or that I tried to motivate things with are probing in this regime, and so we're looking at this plateau in the experiments right now. Of course, we wanted to see what ADS-CFT would tell us, and so I can put N equals 4 super Yang mills on that graph, and look at that. That looks really good, doesn't it? Well, that's a great sales pitch. Because, in fact, if... Well, I shouldn't underplay it, but it is a sales pitch. If you look at the most recent, it's a couple of years old now, but if you look at more recent data, what you find is that at least the blue curve, which is what they study in great detail, QCD, it's drifted upward slightly. And so this, you know, those two lines are starting to separate. We still have this strongly coupled conformal perhaps behavior here. The other comment I wanted to make is that what I'm studying there is not just a general gauge gravity duality. It is ADS-CFT, N equals 4, And so this line is a straight line that runs all the way across. There's a program under the name gauge gravity duality where people are trying to describe all of the physics of QCD. What I'm talking about today is just trying to describe this plateau up here. And so we'll literally only be focused on this sort of plasma phase of QCD. Yep.
I mean, also, one is only asymptotically. If you put in corrections, what happens?
Corrections for the n equals 4?
Or put corrections to the 1, what do they do?
Right. Oh, you mean how does it come down? I confess I don't know how, at what rate it comes down. No.
Do you expect that to be correct?
Yes.
Extreme. I mean,
G angles.
Or the G squared itself.
Right.
Which is smaller.
Here, no.
So that's my degree of the
I think the aficionados of perturbative QCD admit that they cannot calculate reliably in this regime, and that's why I'm showing you lattice data. Some people I've heard speak say that they can calculate it here at 5.
They admit they can't calculate it because the coupling is too strong.
Yeah. But
it's actually remarkable how flat the blue and the red are. You don't even see a writing in
it. Truly incredible, yeah. No, it is interesting.
Why is it so strange?
Because you're changing energy by a factor of 2 over a very low energy.
This is just the number of flavors, remember?
No, the bottom. I'm looking at the flatness again.
He's looking at the energy scale here.
The coupling between 2 and 4, the coupling nominally changes by a pretty significant factor. And so those curves should not be flat.
2 flavors and 4
flavors? No,
he's saying if I just follow the blue curve, it looks pretty darn flat as I go from T critical up to, say, 4.
So you're going from 600 MeV to 1.2 GeV, except coupling, you're running that range.
Yeah.
And you don't see it running.
Rob, one more question.
Yeah.
If you just look at other literal examples of ADS CFT, but not n equals 4, like n equals 2 theories, presumably you could get a scatter between 0.5 and 1 or something there. So the 0.75 is not a magical prediction of real ADS CFT, is it?
Sorry, 0.5?
So, the 0.75 that you're stressing from n equals 4.
Yes.
You could look at some other example, some n equals 2 theory that we have a gravity dual of, or some n equals 1 theory, and presumably get different ratios than the 0.75 compared to the 2.
Why don't you ask that question a bit? Because it's a prelude, but if any theory where you have an Einstein gravity dual, you're going to get that number.
0.75?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
An excellent question, and we'll get there. We're still in the motivation, the introduction. So the other place to look is there's an experiment, or there are experiments. And so the remarkable result there is that what they found is that to interpret the RIC data, this new phase, or the strongly coupled gluon plasma, is acting more like a liquid than a gas. And that goes by the buzzword elliptic flow. And so when they have this collision, the distribution of the particles emerging from the fireball here is not uniformly distributed, indicating a collective flow or elliptic flow. However, the shear viscosity also has to be relatively small, otherwise it would even out that distribution. So how small is small? Well, here is a recent result from last spring. The white dots are the data that you should pay attention to. The red line is the model, the theorist fit. And so in this particular case, 8 over S is about 0.08. This is very much a work in progress. These the theorists are working continually to improve their programs, to improve their fits. Here they change. This is the same paper. We've just changed the initial conditions, and this is the same data, but now they're fitting it to A over S.
Should we look at the white dots or the black dots?
No, you're looking at the white dots. But we've gone up by a factor of two. In this paper, though, they are willing to say that they're confident that the upper bound that they'll put on that ratio is less than 0.2. Sorry? Basically, it's the distribution of, it's a physical distribution of the energy in the fireball, where it was in that little blob. So this was the surprise coming from experiment, that we have this new phase of matter, and it's behaving like a near ideal fluid. Of course, which is a theoretical challenge. Of course, though, what generated a lot of excitement was that these bold explorers on the string theory side did calculations of precisely this quantity for the N equals 4 super Yang Mills and found this very elegant result, 1 over 4 pi, which, when I evaluate it, gives me 0.08. So it's precisely in the same ballpark.
Anticipate a little. Do the fits to the experimental data, can they confidently put a lower bound on 8 over
n? No, not yet.
No.
Didn't we see some results from experiment before? Well, just
sure. Well, I'm not sure what you meant. I mean, there.
That's
data there.
Okay.
So we understand this as a universal result for any theory with an Einstein gravity dual, and so there's a whole host of people that have, after they produced the initial results, who worked on this universality and proving that one always finds that result. However, these folks went a one step further, and they made the conjecture that this elegant answer actually represented a universal bound in nature, that any physical system should have 8 over s greater than or equal to 1 over 4 pi. And so what was their motivation? Well, they already knew that there were a large class of models, and now we know any Einstein gravity dual produces precisely 1 over 4 pi. They also noted that that number is much smaller than the same ratio for commonly known materials. So this is a graph that they produced. So here's liquid helium, nitrogen, and water. So in each of these cases, it's a function of the temperature, but you can see these lower limits in each of these cases is significantly higher than their viscosity bound, which is a line that runs along, or it's bare, well, here you can't even see it. It runs along the bottom of the graph there. They also provided just a very hand-waving argument that said, if I have a fluid of particles or quasi-particles, there's a mean time between collisions. There's also the typical energy of a particle. And so 8 over s goes roughly like the product of those quantities, which looks kind of like the uncertainty principle. And so that suggests that it's a quantity greater than 1 or h bar. They probably said it much more elegantly than I just did. Bekenstein more recently came up with an interesting idea. He created this thought experiment where he was thinking about an ideal fluid flowing into a black hole, and he was setting up the situation so he could do it as slowly as possible, and he claimed that that led to a violation of the second law of thermodynamics. However, that violation went away if he imposed or if the fluid actually had was a near ideal fluid, if 8 over S had some lower bound. And so he again suggested by this kind of argument that there should be a lower bound of order 1.
Why would it not increase the entropy?
We can go back. It is increasing the black hole entropy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You're dumping stuff in, you get more energy. It does go up, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it goes up too fast.
Well, because the mass goes up.
No, the black hole entropy goes up too fast. You're losing entropy. As far as the outside of the system is, you're losing entropy because you're dumping the liquid. It's disappearing between the behind the horizon. But now it's in the horizon. But it increased too slowly. Yeah. So.
Why is that? What is that entropy?
I don't know. We'd have to go back and look at the paper.
But this is some argument of the same general flavor as his claim that
yeah.
You violate the second law if you violate the so-called Bekenstein bound.
It's of that flavor, yeah. Yeah.
So Bekenstein has a long history of trying to argue that if you had an object that was too small with too much entropy and you threw it into a black hole, it would violate the second law. This is an argument of the same kind of flavor, possibly with some different details.
So there are various rough arguments suggesting that there should be a bound, and this is a very small number, it's an elegant result, hence the conjecture. However, they already in their paper noted that there would be a species problem. If you had lots of non-interacting species, you could increase the entropy part of the ratio without increasing the viscosity. And so there were already some discussion about the precise domain of validity of that bound. So that was the introduction. Now to go on to the meat of the talk. So first of all, just very briefly, I wanted to give a schematic outline of what the kinds of calculations one is doing. Here's our supergravity effective action for type 2B string theory. We're looking at this particular background, so the phi form plays a role. There's Einstein gravity. Of course, there are other fields, but they don't really play a role here. Schematically, then, what do I do? Well, to put a finite temperature in the CFT, we stick a black hole in the ADS space. But then what one does is one looks at fluctuations or a linearized graviton in that background. So you're solving some second order linearized equation of motion with appropriate boundary conditions at the horizon. What that lets us do then is one can go and look up in your finite temperature theory, field theory textbook, some formula like this for the shear viscosity. And the hard part is this part. You want to calculate a certain correlator of the stress tensor. So that's what ADS-CFT lets you do easily, because it translates this into a correlator coming from those gravitons. Then I'm just doing a Fourier transform and taking a particular limit to get the viscosity. I had a black hole that already had a geometric or a Hawking entropy associated with the horizon. When you take the ratio, you get this very beautiful result. Of course, this is only the leading order two derivative action. We expect that in general there are going to be lots of higher derivative terms. And in string theory, those are going to be coming from two places. One is string theory, so they're alpha prime corrections. The other place is from quantum corrections or string loops. And so that's going to, these corrections introduce alpha prime over L squared or 1 over square root lambda corrections. These are going like lambda over NC. And so there's a second set of corrections associated with those. But basically, in studying high derivative terms, what we're studying are the effects in the gauge theory of going to finite n or finite lambda. So how would I do this calculation? Again, very schematically. Now I'm going to start with that same action, but I'm going to stick some higher curvature term in there. Well, I've got a black hole that was a nice solution of the Einstein equations, but it's no longer a solution. But I want to think of this as a correction, and so we'll work perturbatively. We'll say to leading order, this is my solution, but then the extra junk in the equations of motion are going to make a small deformation of my solution. Similarly, when I look at the graviton, there's lots of extra crap in the linearized equations of motion, but we just dump it all on this side of the equation. And so I have this second order piece that I recognize from the Einstein equations, and then this piece is coming from my higher curvature term. And again, I'll work perturbatively. There's a leading result that satisfies this equals zero, and then if you plug that in here, you get a small perturbation due to the extra terms coming from the higher derivatives. Given this, though, again, I can, ADS-CFT tells me that I can easily calculate that correlator. However, there's going to be a small correction to the standard result that Einstein gravity gave.
Rob,
yep.
Do you view H as the same order as delta G? I mean, you're changing your background by an amount given by the higher curvature term, and then you want to perturb.
I'll look at the linearized equations of motion. They
small compared to delta G also, or?
There would be an expansion parameter, and so you would consistently feed the expansion parameter into this. So some of the delta G stuff would go into here as well.
The viscosity is really funny.
So here's an example, a well-known term coming from type 2B string theory. I've written it as c to the fourth now, because rather than writing it in terms of curvatures, I'm writing it there in terms of the Weyl tensor. The coefficient there has an alpha prime cubed, because it's a well-known stringy correction appearing at in the string tree level calculations already. You can run through that calculation, and here's the result. So I get 1 plus that correction, and as per the dictionary we talked about, the alpha prime cube gets translated to 1 over lambda to the 3 halves. One of the things to note is that it's 1 plus something. This is a positive number, and so at the time, this was interpreted possibly providing evidence for the bound in that the corrected stringy plasma now doesn't saturate the bound, but it has a ratio of 8 over s that's bigger than the bound, or the postulated bound. We'll get there in 1 second. On the other hand, this is just one out of a myriad of terms that appear at this order in the string action. What about all those other terms? How do I know this is even a reliable result? In particular, Michael Green and one of his students, in the case where there is constant dilaton, constant axion, there's a metric and a five form in the game, they wrote down, in principle, all of the corrections that would appear in the type 2B theory, and they wrote it in this very elegant form here. So here's the five form, here's the Weyl tensor that we saw. The problem is it's a very elegant integral or expression with this superspace integral, and doing that superspace integral is hard work. So this lay fallow for a couple of years until one of Michael's other students, Miguel Palos, picked it up, and with about a year's worth of work, he reduced this down to 20 or a huge set of terms, which I've schematically written out there. So one can then ask, well, did all of these terms affect that calculation?
So these things are preserving the conformalness of the ADS solution.
Well, that's something, yeah, that these people, you can already argue here at this level that the ADS5 cross S5, because of the supersymmetry of the solution, that these won't contribute there, and so that leaves that alone. Right. My assumption is that I have a conformal field theory, and so the vacuum, if you like, is always going to be ADS-5. I don't know if I said it already, but we looked at all of those corrections, and the answer is no, they don't affect the calculation at all. And so I've actually wrapped up results from two papers here. What we showed was that C to the fourth term is sufficient for any particular background, if I'm doing these calculations for any particular background or theory where I have an ADS-5 vacuum cross some smooth five-dimensional manifold, say an Einstein-Sasaki. One thing that's happened here, though, that I've snuck in is before I was writing down a 10-dimensional action, this is now the five-dimensional action, and so that's a five-dimensional Weyl tensor. And so what we're saying is that for any of these backgrounds, I can just Kaluza-Klein, I'll reduce it down, I'll get exactly the same action here. And for that gravitational action, there's one calculation to do, and I will get this universal result where there's some number sitting there. Now, the interesting part of the exercise then, or an interesting part of the exercise then, is this is on the gravitational side. I then have to translate that into a result for the gauge theory. And so although for this part of the calculation I didn't have to worry about those details, this translation, the dictionary, the details depend on what particular theory we're talking about. And so for n equals 4, this is the answer. Here there's a little bit more than what we had before, because what one notes from the Green, the work of Michael Green and his students, is this isn't just the factor that I wrote down before. This is actually a modular form, and so it contains more than just the leading e to the phi term, or this contribution, but there's actually, you can extract from it a 1 over nc squared correction, which implies a quantum or a loopy correction. But that's coming not from doing an actual loop, but using implicitly several stages back. Michael's using the SL2Z invariance there to put that modular form there.
So the assumption is that M5 doesn't have to be supersymmetric, but rather smooth.
No, actually, I snuck an S up there. It is supersymmetric. There was a certain stage in the argument when you're doing the Kaluza-Kleining to get rid of a certain term. The way we did it was we relied on supersymmetry. It could be that you can get around it other ways, but that's the way that we made the argument.
And that it's not singular, that it was
a right, yeah.
Positive delta, doesn't have some interpretation on the gravity side?
Positive delta, I'm not sure what you mean.
Delta to be positive, right?
Yes.
Okay, is there some geometry is non-singular?
No, I think it's really a reflection that, again, the string theory gave me a particular coefficient here, and it happened to be coming with a positive sign there. So it was really not the geometry of the background, but really the string theory that handed this to us. Again, you know, for this particular calculation, in fact, I didn't even have to worry about the internal part of the geometry. But then, well, as I said, this is n equals 4, but in general, there are lots of theories where this calculation might apply, and so this universal delta on the gravity side turns into a more complicated expression in the general case. But it still puts us in mind of this idea of universal.
So for going back to this, this is just the dependence on the volume of the Sasaki action?
Essentially, yeah. There's a, I'm trying to remember if there's anything else. Well, one has to be careful. Well, that's one of the facts. You also have, yeah, that's an ingredient. There are other things you have to be careful about defining. For example, the TIF coupling gives us various factors of n appearing in different places. But this is sort of a volume effect. Okay, so we're not going in chronological order, but Art of the Fourth is well known, but our friends here, including Steve and Sho, back over a year ago, were thinking about 8 over S and whether or not it had some deeper physical meaning. This bound might be provide some insight into some deeper principle. And we were just thinking, well, let's look at an arbitrary, or let's look at some other interesting higher derivative corrections. We talked about R to the fourth, but why not just look at R squared? That seems to be the simplest correction. And so here I can, again, think that I'm starting with, in five dimensions, here's my Einstein gravity, the cosmological constant, and I'm adding, well, perturbatively, these are small coefficients here, but I'm adding any possible R squared term. And you go through the calculation, one finds this result here. Again, it's a perturbative calculation, and so you might expect higher order corrections. But at this order, you see that only this coefficient for the Riemann squared appears there.
Okay, but the internal dimensions could be complicated enough that they generate these, all these corrections.
Yeah. I'm sure Steve would say it more eloquently and talk about the landscape, but no, he's only smart.
Is there actually one known ADS-CFT example where alpha 3 appears and is positive?
Would you guys be patient? I can neither confirm nor deny that there's only one. One of the points I wanted to make is that only this parameter appears here. In this context, these other parameters can be modified by field redefinitions. This is a physical answer. It shouldn't be dependent on those field redefinitions, and so it's a good thing that they didn't appear there. However, now we have a minus sign, so if that's positive, then the bound is violated. So what's up with that? Well, there are various possibilities one can consider, first being that the bound is violated. The second is that in any real physical theory or stringy example, I'll never realize a case where alpha 3 is positive. This is just some kooky theory we cooked up, but maybe when alpha 3 is positive, we're living out in the swampland. Or C, which is the answer inevitably, is that something more interesting happens. So to get further insight into this question, what we did is we focused our attention on Gauss-Bonnet gravity. So that's taking a particular linear combination here. I've got my Riemann squared, but then I have precisely minus 4 Ricci squared plus Ricci scalar squared. And the reason one's doing that is because this is a particularly simple theory to work with. It was studied in detail back in the first superstring revolution, came up in the context of stringy gravity. And the remarkable thing is that even though this is a higher curvature theory, the equations of motion are still second order. And one also has exact black hole solutions. And so the point is that we can repeat those calculations in the ADS-CFT, but we don't have to treat this as a perturbative parameter.
What was the motivation to study
tandem? It was at the time people were excited by the being second order, and so that there weren't ghosts. If you, this was just an alpha prime correction, but the idea at the time was still, if I take it seriously, I'm not going to find ghosts in the propagator. So with this particular correction, then I can't use my Einstein black hole, but that's okay. I have exact solutions that I can pull out of the literature. Again, I'm doing the perturbation, but even though it's not precisely the same equation here, it's still a second order equation, and so we can work, we can solve that just as easily as the original equation, and so there's no need in either of these stages to work perturbatively in that in the parameter controlling that correction. And so again, one can go through the calculation, and now one finds the answer is this. And so there are no higher order corrections, it's just 1 minus alpha 3. But this is then saying, if I take this seriously, I can just crank up alpha 3 and make 8 over s arbitrarily small. That seems bad. And so what we did is we thought, well, you know, is there some sickness that we can detect when this theory has a positive alpha 3? And the idea that we eventually focused on was that the CFT is a theory without gravity. It's typically, I'm thinking about it in flat space, and so there's a fixed light cone, and causality should be unambiguous. And so can we, by playing around with this effect of a gravity action on the, can I find any problems with causality? And so what we did is we probed the ADS background with a certain set of graviton signals, looked at in a certain approximation, and that we found then, or we argued that indeed, causality is violated when that quantity is positive. However, it has to be positive enough. So,
if you look at this, the graviton propagator, which gets contribution from the R square, do you see something happen?
Well, that's not precisely what we did. What we were studying, I mean, we have an equation of motion for the graviton, and we were doing something simpler. We were
the second order terms.
We have, yeah, it's not the same equation, but it's a second order equation.
So do you see something in the just linearized?
Well, effectively, we're using the linearized equation.
You're just saying the linearized. It's a graviton propagator alpha 3.
I guess so, yeah.
You're saying signals, the causality problem is signals can propagate through the bulk and get from the boundary through the bulk back to the boundary outside the light cone of the boundary.
Yes.
Are there known solutions of this, of the equations of motion for this?
Well, I'm not sure. I wrote down this theory, and so there's an exact set of black hole solutions that we're working with, and then we're propagating around in that background. So we had this rather curious result here that alpha had to be positive, but sufficiently positive before that problem set in. And so it seems that the theory admits some violation, but not an arbitrary violation of the bound. And so you get this rather curious number here. But could it be that we found a particular sickness when alpha was positive enough? Did we miss something else in this regime?
For alpha negative, you know there's no problem.
We didn't actually look there because we were so focused on the 8 over s. We can talk about that later.
What the center looks at the negative by the constant.
Sorry?
What the center and his student,
often?
Like alpha 3 negative, and they found some trouble.
Well, okay, so let's go to what Hoffman and Juan did. So this is some corroborating evidence, perhaps, for the idea that this really is the place where problems first set in. So they're just doing here, well, for their own motivations, which I won't go into, they're just looking at conformal field theory calculations. I'll remind you that four-dimensional superconformal theories characterized by these two central charges, which you can detect by looking at the trace on a curved background. And so these C and A appear in a certain way here. We'll come back to those equations. But what they did is they looked at certain scattering experiments in the conformal field theory. So they introduced a disturbance in the center of the space, and then they measured the flux. They integrated the flux along scribe plus in a certain direction. And so this depends on the three-point function, which is very constrained because it's a conformal field theory. And so when you look, well, when you evaluate this, then you get a, you can rely on the results for the three-point function to get a nice form for this expression here. But what they noted was that as you move around in the space, if the parameters in the three-point function, which are controlled by these central charges, get too large, essentially, you start to see negative energies appearing in your detectors out at infinity. And so that demanding that the energy always be positive puts a constraint on the difference between the two central charges. It has to lie between plus or minus a half C. Now, yeah, okay, N equals 4, C is 0. Now you can translate, how does this translate to a holographic context? And so C minus A determines the coefficient of the Riemann squared term in the gravity action. And so if you translate this result here to a constraint on the parameters in the gravity theory, what you find is this.
But and so is here, equal to A, alpha 3 is equal to 0?
That's right. And so what you find then is this rather curious number here again. And so this is precisely mapped onto the result for causality violation. You also find a lower bound, yes.
And as far as I can tell, the more non-conformity was used with ABS doors.
Well, I'll disagree with that in a little bit, but there was a question over there.
This somehow related to the Waltz proof that if in the bulk you violate energy condition, you can sort of go from boundary to the boundary outside the...
I think the answer is no.
No, I think it is related because you are violating energy conditions by adding this R squared term.
Yeah, no, but... Well, okay, it may be related at some level, but I think sort of this kind of thing in detail we looked at when we were trying to find violations. And when we were doing our studies with Lovelock gravity, we couldn't apply it. So I'm not exactly sure if it's the same idea. I think it's a little bit different.
In your work with Stephen Schell and others, you worked with a large, possibly large alpha 3, but then you ignored, r to the fourth corrections or whatever else.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas here, this formula for the anomaly is presumably exact. So their thing is an exact result, and the fact that it agrees with yours, do you understand why you got the exact result? For instance, do r to the fourth corrections not affect the disease you found or something?
Let's ask. so here's some correlation between the two results, but you can still ask, does that really, prove anything? Do I really see alpha 3 greater than 0? And so in this remarkable paper, these two fellows at Harvard actually suggested that they knew an F-theory setup with some brains here that produced a certain conformal field theory. And in that field theory, if you reduce it down to the effect of phi d action, they claimed that you could calculate and get this result here. Now, there was perhaps some doubt about this claim because the argument seemed rather glib, and so you might still ask whether or not the result is reliable and whether the bound really is violated in this particular case. And so this is something that we've spent some time looking at in detail, and our answer is yes. Essentially, what it reduces down to is that I can write down the effect of action here to this order, and there are basically just a couple of functions that I need to know for this effect of action. Basically, the ratio of the ADS scale to Planck's constant, or the Planck scale, and this parameter alpha 3. But I can use this holographic anomaly to get those precisely in terms of the central charges. And so you do a more or less standard calculation of the holographic trace anomaly and compare it with the standard, and what you find is that that ratio here is precisely given by that, and alpha 3 is given by that. And so given that theory then, or given that gravitational effect of action, I know that I can calculate and I get this result, but that's controlled then precisely by the central charges. And as long as I can find a theory where C minus A is positive, the claim is that you, well, there are going to be some caveats in 2 seconds, but the claim is that you can rely on the result, and so this should be a result that you can believe. So the KSS, so the bound is violated. And so the caveats are that you really want this to be a reasonable gravity theory. And so I want to have a large ADS scale compared to the Planck scale. So I want to work with a large central charge. And I really want this to be sort of a reasonable derivative expansion. So alpha 3 really has to be small. And so this particular combination has to be small. And so what that means is that what we're finding are violations of this bound, but they're only small violations or perturbative violations. Joe has a question.
In standard model, the coefficient of Riemann squared drives, right, has a log.
Sorry?
In the standard model, the coefficient of Riemann squared has a log. Isn't this something John Donahue has talked about?
I would, yeah, okay.
So I mean, this is not gonna, it's not, when you talk about it, it's a number, not something that depends on scale.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting conversation to have, but yes, it's a number and it depends. Well, okay, I'm not sure if I said it enough times, but this is in the context of supersymmetric theories.
Right, no, I know that's clear, but I don't know if that's enough to bring it from running.
But also for conformal theories, right?
Right, it is conformal, but it's...
The bulk is not conformal, is not... The bulk has a scale, so things could run.
Why don't you ask me about that afterwards?
Which is the radius of your internal space of generating this R squared? Is it the 7 range, or can you see where that, tracing where that came from?
Yeah, basically, it's the 7 brains, yeah. And so we had this one example, which came from a stringing construction. But what we did in the paper is we looked around and said, can we find other superconformal gauge theories that are going to, you know, satisfy these caveats? And so you can make lists of these theories. And the first constraint was that we wanted C minus A to be positive. Turns out that's easy. Any example we wrote down, C minus A was always positive. The hard part was, or the harder, the slightly more challenging part is you want C minus A over C to be a small number. So typically these quantities alone are going like n squared. And so what you can do though is cook up the theory so that this particular combination, or the difference goes like n, so this combination goes like 1 over n. That's basically what we saw in the Katz-Petrov example. And so here's a list of theories where delta is small. The first theory, so this is one of the lists, so this is just with an SUN gauge group. The first one, of course, is n equals 4. But then there are 4 examples here where the result is going like 1 over n. And so the claim is that given these gauge theories, I know enough about them to know what that, if I believe in ADS CFT, I know what the gravitational dual is going to be, and I know that they're going to violate this KSS bound. And at the time, what was interesting to me was I could say that, and I don't even, you know, I don't know where these theories come from a stringing construction, but just knowing this information about the field theory is enough to tell me that this bound is violated. However, I was told on Tuesday that I was just lazy, and that if I looked hard enough in the literature, I can find constructions for these. So I know I can find a construction for this, and I expect that I can go find these other theories there as well.
Yes.
So you're saying you have stringy geometries that have C not equal to A?
Do I? Yeah.
Okay.
I'm running out of time, so why don't we skip ahead? Let's skip ahead. So what I promised, the last thing I wanted to talk about is this idea, you know, can we use ADS-CFT to make precise comparisons to what's coming out of experiment? And so there's sort of a program here that was suggested that we have these gravitational actions. There are just a few parameters. ADS-CFT tells us how to translate those parameters to parameters appearing in the conformal algebra or in the endpoint functions of the stress tensor. And so the question then becomes, in this context, can we find a match, or can we find a holographic model that matches the data, or does the QCD plasma fit into sort of the universality class described by a certain holographic dual?
Where are you going? Those R-squared terms come from our fourth term, don't
they? No.
Originally
in plasma? No. Nope. Can I move on?
Nope.
One of the things is I want to get is,
well, okay, except by supersymmetry. I want to get as many different handles on, if I want to make this work, or if I want to constrain, see that the system's constrained, I want as many different handles on the QCD, on the data as I can get. And so these are some examples of numbers that you can find in the literature. So there was this thing that we talked about, the energy density, that I can look at lattice papers. There was 8 over S that's emerging out of the analysis of the RIC data. There's also here, just as an example, a certain relaxation time that also appears in the hydro codes. So there are some numbers. This is fairly well known. This is factors of two, and this is,
what is
although that looks good.
That's a product.
Temperature times the relaxation time. And I was going to say, even though that doesn't look too bad, this is just suggestive. They really don't have control of that yet. And so the question is, can I fit that with a certain holographic model? So the first one is Einstein gravity. You know, you're in the right ballpark, but you're not quite there. In particular, this doesn't quite seem to fit. But then we can go to this, we can try the R-squared, the Riemann squared corrections. And so these terms appear like so. And so now, well, this was what I claim is the best known number. And so here I've got a free parameter. Why don't we just fit that and see if it works? And it's apparently looking like it's working. But if we look here, this number is actually too large, because what Hoffman and Maldacena told us is that number had to be less than 1/2. And when I tried to fit it, all of these, you know, potential values were bigger than that. And so there isn't going to be a consistent theory that I can use in this framework that I can use to fit that. We also have the art of the fourth at hand. And so you could try and play the same game here. We don't really have any constraints. There are two parameters, two pieces of data. This is a work in progress. But the one reason you might do it is to see that when you're fitting now, you're in this regime where you can believe that there's a consistent conformal field theory on the other side. But to really constrain that, I need to come up with a number there. I started a little bit late, so I will indulge myself and say a few more words. So this is basically the program, but there are a number of caveats or comments one can make. The first is, here, you're going to have to be extremely lucky.
The reason being, what we're really good at calculating in these holographic models is with Einstein gravity. And so is there any reason to believe that even if there was some effective field theory describing the strongly coupled quark gluon plasma, should I believe that that lies close in theory space to Einstein gravity? Not really, so we're going to have to get lucky. Another comment is that what really generated a lot of the excitement was this idea that this Einstein result, 8 over s equals 1 over 4 pi, was so close to the results that you see coming out of RIC. But in this sort of context, that's just an equation that describes some surface that cuts through theory space. And so any point, you know, out here that lies on that surface is going to give me 8 over s equals 1 over 4 pi. I don't necessarily now have to be sitting close to Einstein gravity. On the other hand, consistency just is going to help us or come to our possibly help us in that what we were finding was that you can't make these parameters in the conformal field theory arbitrarily large because you run into inconsistencies. And then the last comment is to really make this work, you're going to have everything that I've talked about so far. I was just doing one special set of calculations, and I claimed that I didn't have to know a great deal about the theory, but all I was learning about was various properties of the endpoint functions, effectively, of the stress tensor. To make the program work, it seems clear that you're going to have to expand the suite of observables and operators beyond just the stress tensor. And then we're skipping through this. Oops. And so that brings me to the conclusions. So we have this remarkable tool that allows us to study strongly coupled gauge theories or holographic CFTs. And what we're seeing is that these R-squared or higher curvature corrections can play an important role in certain instances. In particular, they lead to violations, or they seem to produce the first examples of violations of this conjectured KSS bound. One can naturally ask, is there a bound at all, and what would it be? Certainly not this number here. And then there's also this program by which perhaps you can use this tool to get some insight into nature. And with that, I will conclude.
So for your fix, I mean, even if you just wanted to explore the properties of stress tensor, one could ask how conformal is QCD in that region.
Yes.
So, I mean, I would have thought that rather than look at tau pi, you should have been looking at bulk viscosity or the speed of sound.
Yes. An excellent question, and had I had time, I would have shown you this transparency, which is, you know, you can ask, you know, how well can this idea work? You know, if I ask this question, you know, am I eventually going to find an appropriate model that fits the data? And unfortunately, the answer is no, or the answer had better be no. The claim is if you get something that fits, then you know that it's working too well. And of course, what Mukund's suggesting is that I gave you this sales pitch about the energy density here because it displays this beautiful plateau, but also plotted here is the pressure, which gives us more of a slow rise. And the thing is that what you can ask about, or what they do already for you, is they can ask about what they call the interaction strength, or we might interpret it as the non-conformality parameter, which is epsilon minus 3p divided by t to the fourth. For a conformal field theory, that should be zero. But what I see here is that right at the transition, this is spiking, and then it tails off. Now, unfortunately, RIC is sitting on the back side, halfway down here. And so you're right. You know, to describe that, I should really be working harder to get some kind of systematic description of theories that are not conformal. What holography, or what we have now in holography, with the ADS-CFT, what I gave you is a systematic description of theories that are conformal, but clearly that's not good enough. What one might hope, though, is that when we get to the LHC, that we're sufficiently far here that we're close to conformal, that we're perturbing away from conformal. And so perhaps this sort of holographic program could still, with appropriate tweaks, be applied here.
Sorry, I'm just following that up. Why couldn't you play with a model that has an infrared wall like the Joe and Matt's toy model and try to mock up the non-conformality also by adding more parameters?
You could, but the point is that in the CFT I had this simple game, but I understood what the simple game was and what I was doing in a systematic way, whereas we're not at that stage yet. We're at the stage where one can make different models and play around with them, but we're, in a broader context, one would look like sort of a global view of how that works. And the way to understand that is by building models and playing with them.
Let me add a comment. You put a wall and put a black hole, the wall ends up behind the black hole.
Clearly, you have to be in the regime where they're all at the same scale, and there's some complicated physics of how the black hole gets changed by the mass gap.
Eva?
There's not a hierarchy between the string tension and the
resolves. I'm not going to go there. I mean, that's what I said, is that even if there is an effective CFT, there's no real reason to expect that it's close to Einstein gravity. Yet, all I can do at this point is perturb away from Einstein gravity. And so, one is limited, just technically, as to what you can do. Capital delta. In what respect? Well, so there was a set of theories where I know what delta is in terms of the microscopic parameters. Is that what you want, or you want me to set a bound on delta?
Yeah.
Okay. Can it get too big? I expect that there are, but we don't know what they are yet. It's a harder game to play because that parameter, it's a harder game to play because now you're looking at the four-point function.
That's not the question.
It certainly is positive in all the known examples in the same way that C minus A is positive in all the known examples. But if I'm just studying it from the point of view of conformal field theory, C minus A seems it can drift into the negative regime. But the only way I know to realize that is with a free conformal field theory. So interacting conformal field theories seem to like positive delta, this other small delta. Gary.
Yes, I wanted to return to Veronica's question about how your causality violation is related to walls. There, so Wolf had a result that if you satisfy some energy condition, then signals through the bulk can never arrive faster than that sort of causal structure on the light cone. So the fact that you are violating causality certainly uses the fact that you violate the energy condition by the R squared term. But you said it was somehow not related to it for some reason, which I didn't quite understand.
What was the second last sentence there? I'm using...
The fact that you see causality
correlation
in your example somehow must, is only possible because you have violated the energy condition in bulk. The R squared term you add doesn't satisfy Wald's energy condition.
Well, in that respect, though, if I'm thinking of Lovelock gravity as Einstein gravity coupled to something, no value of that parameter a priori seems to respect the positive energy bound. And I guess the reason that I wasn't applying it is, I think the way we tried to apply it, or the way Wald typically, the way you talk about it is that you have a system
and you're talking about the total energy of some state or some construction in the middle, what their experiment is, the total flux of energy, you know, in these bad regimes, the total energy coming out is still positive. It's just that in certain directions, you find negative fluxes.
Sorry, you mean even when alpha 3 is bigger than 9 over 200, it's just that in certain directions you find negative fluxes?
I think that's what I just said, yes.
Why is that bad? Why is that something that causes you to rule out the theory if the total flux is positive?
This is an observable in the gauge theory.
Right.
In the gauge theory, the energy density.
But it's not a minor.
It's meaningful. It's an observable.
But it's not a Casimir energy, and it's not a, you know, one of these marginal violations. It's, you know, what you're doing is I went far away, and I integrated over, in, you know, from t equals zero all the way to infinity, and so it's not just a minor fluctuation. It's sort of
you're borrowing an authentic passing. You're allowed to borrow negative energy in fantastic.
Well, yeah, effectively, I sent it over there, and so I. Yeah.
That's right. Any value of positive is positive, you have to. You have this?
Yeah. I'm going to get everywhere positive energies if I'm inside that regime. Yeah. It's